This podcast was recorded Thursday, April 25th at 10:34 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Like protesters will come up with a chant other than, "Hey, hey, ho, ho, something we oppose has got to go." That chant has got to go. Let's be creative, people. Come on. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who benefit from millions of dollars in campaign donations, but lack curiosity as to where that money came from. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, Ohio protests are kind of meh, at least for now. But first, dark money got a little lighter in Ohio this week. As we have learned over the past several years, candidates and campaigns rely heavily on the so-called dark money. Money raised by nonprofit organizations that support candidates and causes, corporations and wealthy donors can give unlimited amounts of money to these organizations. Most of these donations stay secret. That money then gets funneled to candidates and causes. It is all legal so long as the candidates and the campaigns do not directly coordinate with the nonprofit that collects the money. But thanks to the nuclear bailout scandal, criminal prosecutions of former House Speaker Larry Householder and others, as well as civil lawsuits and records released by the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, we are getting a pretty good glimpse of how these secret donations flowed, at least in this case. In the past week, we have learned that First Energy gave $2.5 million to a group that helped Mike DeWine get elected governor in 2018. First Energy gave $1 million to another organization that was helping John Husted's brief campaign for governor before he teamed up with DeWine. The documents revealed a total of about $4 million in support for the DeWine/Husted campaign, to which Governor DeWine said this.
As you know, independent expenditure, we can't collaborate back and forth.
Then he was asked if that money influenced his decision to sign House Bill 6, which bailed out two nuclear power plants and greatly benefited First Energy.
No, absolutely not. I thought this was in the state's interest.
Joining us now is one of the reporters who questioned the governor about the First Energy money, and that is Karen Kassler, State House Bureau Chief for Ohio Public Radio and Television. Karen, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Hey, well, in full disclosure here, while we're talking about disclosure, sure. It was actually my colleague Sarah Donaldson who was there with the governor, but I've been there when he's been questioned about First Energy money before.
Okay. Well, give credit to Sarah there for helping get that sound. But so, you know, if I'm First Energy, Karen, let's just step back here for a sec. If I'm First Energy and I donated what amounts to about $4.5 million to help Governor DeWine and Lieutenant Governor Husted get elected, and the governor basically says he didn't know about it. You know, if I'm First Energy, I'm a little annoyed. I gave all this money and he didn't know about it. What's up with that?
Well, and it goes to the whole arrangement that these groups, these dark money groups have. I mean, like you said, there's no coordination between dark money groups and candidates. They can do campaigns against certain issues, but they can't coordinate with candidates. And so for DeWine to say, I didn't know about it because we didn't coordinate with that group, which is called State Solutions. It's a 501c4. When he says he didn't coordinate with that group, that's the truth, at mm-hmm. least according to the law, that's the truth. So the question then, of course, becomes, well, what exactly were those groups trying to do? You know, they were formed under this IRS law that talks about educating people and educating on the issues, but they've really turned out to be groups that have gotten very powerful and very well funded, and they are bringing in money that they don't have to disclose.
Yeah, I know it's legal and they can't coordinate, so there's probably no email saying thanks for donating to the PAC, but you can't help but wonder at some point at some dinner party or at some fundraising event, hey, you know, I gave $1.5 million or $2.5 million to this PAC, just so you know. And it's like, anyway,
well, so. And when groups do give money to these organizations, they know what the organization, the PAC, the 501c3, 501c4 is going to do with it.
Yeah.
So certainly First Energy had a clue where the money that they sent to State Solutions would be going and how it would be used. But there was also publicly disclosed money that went to both the Republican Governors Association and the Democratic Governors Association in that same election cycle. So they were, First Energy was spreading around a lot of money.
Yeah. So let's follow the money, as they said back in the early 70s. $2.5 million went to this State Solutions. And how do we know that was to support DeWine? There was a label on the document, right?
Yeah, there was a label. One installment of about $500,000 was labeled DeWine. The other two listed as RGA, Republican Governors Association. And this all comes from these documents released by the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, which has been looking into the whole First Energy connection to House Bill 6 and their former chair, Sam Randazzo, and all of the other things that's been involved here.
And there was $1 million given. I love the names of these groups. $1 million given to the Freedom Frontier, labeled as, quote, Houston campaign. This is when he was running for governor before he dropped out and joined DeWine.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that when you are looking at some of these groups, the names are so vague and Americans for American things. You know, I mean, it's just really kind of, it's certainly difficult to look at the name of a dark money group and figure out exactly what they do. And I suppose that's by design. But it does make it very difficult.
Securing Ohio's future. Who could be against that?
Exactly.
Generation Now. That was the big one during the House Bill 6.
Yes, Generation Now. And that is the dark money group that has actually entered a plea deal in the whole House Bill 6 case, in the federal case. And so, yeah, they were involved, and First Energy was involved in that as well.
Now, if it wasn't for House Bill 6 and the investigation, if the lid hadn't blown off this thing, we would not know about any of these donations.
That is very true. And it does bring up the question about whether something like this could happen again. And that's what lawmakers, Democratic lawmakers mostly, but a few Republican lawmakers have said that they are concerned about, is that there have been no changes to state law regarding transparency, campaign finance, anything like that, that could prevent something like a House Bill 6 scandal from happening again. House Bill 6, that scandal is the largest corruption scandal in state history, and nothing has changed in the law to make sure that it wouldn't happen again.
Yeah, most of that law is still in effect. I mean, plants bailout, the nuke plants bailout, that's gone. But the subsidies for the coal burning plants, one of which is in Indiana, the green energy mandates have been stripped out. None of that's been repealed.
Right. And the other coal-fired power plant, the one not in Indiana, is in Speaker Jason Stevens' district. And though the Republican House Speaker has said, as far as he's concerned, all the investigations into House Bill 6 are over, that it's been looked at by the legislature, and it is what it is, and it's standing. He has no intention of trying to bring any proposal forward to repeal any parts of House Bill 6, though you do have some bills that would repeal the whole thing or just repeal parts of it.
Yeah, you mentioned that advocates for greater transparency say we need more transparency to prevent this from happening again. We don't know if it's happening now. We really don't.
That's true. It's an interesting point, and it's certainly something to think about. I think, you know, there's so many questions about why voters haven't been more incensed about this. And perhaps it's because people feel like, hey, this is probably happening all the time, which is a terrible thing to think about your government, because you want your government to use your tax dollars effectively, to pass legislation that really benefits people, and to protect people, make sure that bad stuff isn't happening.
Now, it's been 5 years since House Bill 6 became law, 4 years since the householder indictments and his farm was raided. It's been a trickle. But every couple of months, DeWine and Householder get pulled a little bit closer to this scandal. This is another little drop in that trickle. Is there any, I don't want to ask you to speculate, but is there any indication that there's more out there, more to come?
Well, what we know is from federal prosecutors, they've said that they're still investigating, and certainly they finished up the trials of Larry Householder and former Ohio Republican Party Chair Matt Borges before they filed federal charges against former Public Utilities Commission Chair Sam Randazzo. They filed charges against him in December. Then Attorney General Dave Yost has filed state charges against Randazzo and two First Energy executives, Chuck Jones and Michael Dowling. And of course, Randazzo apparently died by suicide, so he's no longer a factor in this, but these cases are moving forward. And so far, DeWine and Houston have not faced any charges. They have been named in civil lawsuits that were brought by shareholders of FirstEnergy in terms of asking for depositions and asking for information. But they have not been facing any charges. They have not been accused of anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and after waiting years for the feds to wrap up their investigation, Attorney General Yost now is proceeding with his. He's made those indictments, issued indictments against, as you said, the late Sam Randazzo, Jones, and Dowling, and Householder. So where does that, is that, do we know anything about that investigation, where that is going, where, if there are any more indictments to come, if the folks who cooperated with the feds, Juan Cespedes and Seth Longstreth, they are cooperating with Yost? Do we know anything about that?
I'm glad you brought up that Yost filed the state charges against Larry Householder, because those are campaign finance related, not necessarily the same kind of charges, the racketeering and bribery charges that the federal charges were on Householder. We know from Dave Yost that he plans to continue on with this case. And we know that Juan Cespedes and Jeff Longstreth, who were the two, respectively, the lobbyist and aide who had pleaded guilty, who would cooperate with federal investigators, we're still waiting to hear what their sentences are, and no idea whether they're working with state investigators on this. But I mean, I think it's fair to say this isn't over. And the fact that this is the largest corruption scandal in state history, according to former U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Ohio, David DeVillers, that this is going to take a while. It's going to take a while to untangle and unravel everything and make sure that all of the people who were involved are accused, that justice is done.
Yeah, you know, you're not a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know what the statute of limitations laws are, but they have to be bumping up against some of them. I know the feds were bumping up against the statute of limitation law of bringing charges. I'm unsure where the state stands, so it might be something to look into. I don't know if you know.
And I think Yost had said when the state charges came up that indeed the state is bumping up against statute of limitations, and so that's why he wanted to go forward with this, because obviously, there's a ton of stuff to go through. I mean, emails and documents and all sorts of wiretap information and all of these things that really probably still are out there needing to be looked into. And so it takes a long time to develop this case. And that's frustrating, of course, for people who are concerned about what happened here. And did for, you know, FirstEnergy was supposed to get $1 billion over 10 years from this nuclear power plant bailout law. That was the part that was repealed. But what else is out there? Like you said, what else is happening that maybe we'd like to know more about?
Yeah, there is that deadline. So maybe we will at least come to closure on the first phase of this while that works way through the court system. You know, underneath all of this is the 2026 race for governor. Dave Yost is eyeing it. John Houston is eyeing it. Alison Russo, who has been talked about as a statewide candidate, has been making more noise about this lately. She's the Democrat House Minority Leader. So that's also sort of the undercurrent behind this whole thing.
Well, and also Dave Yost has been talking about running for governor against Houston. And so being that he is very heavily involved in the state's prosecution of those accused in the House Bill 6 scandal, that's really notable. And he certainly is in a key position to start figuring out exactly what's next in terms of the state's charges and what the state's going to do here.
Yeah, it would be an interesting if there were allegations against Husted coming from the state attorney general's office, if they're going to be campaign foes down the road. But that is way down the road. That's pure speculation at this point.
Of course. But it is notable that here we are, you know, 2 years out from this race talking about who might be running. Certainly Dave Yost, he had some fingerprints on the House Bill 6 case in terms of the potential referendum that the supporters of House Bill 6 wanted to put, if they wanted to stop. He was involved in whether that referendum would go forward, whether voters would be able to decide in 2019 whether House Bill 6 would be repealed, which voters never got the chance to do that.
all rich ammunition for Democrats, but they have not been able to take advantage of it yet. We'll see if that happens.
That's absolutely true. Democrats have not been able to take corruption as they've tried to bring it up, for instance, in the Electronic Classroom of Tomorrow, ECOT, that whole situation, even going back to CoinGate back in the early 2000s with the Tom Noe fundraising situation. I mean, it's a hard case to make, I think, and it's complicated, but it certainly seems to be getting easier to explain as more of this is coming to light.
Doesn't help that a lot of Democrats voted for Larry Householder to become Speaker. I'm sure that's a
and that's an
part
important
of the equation.
Point.
House Bill 6,
House Bill 6 was not a Republican-only bill. I mean, it was a bipartisan bill. It had bipartisan support because it had a lot of stuff in it, which we were just talking about. There's a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, we mentioned that First Energy gave money to Mike DeWine and his bid for governor. They also gave money to Richard Cordray, his opponent, that year.
Right.
So it was less money, but they did give some to Richard Cordray, and Cordray supported the bailout.
Right. Well, and that DeWine has said, and DeWine has actually said this many, many times, even before House Bill 6 was signed, that he believed that nuclear power needed to be a part of Ohio's all of the above energy portfolio. And that's why he said he supported House Bill 6. He was on record as doing that. And he said, you know, that he pointed out that Cordray was on record as doing is supporting nuclear energy in Ohio as well.
Yep. The tangled web all comes down to money. It all comes down to money and power. And that's what we have learned through this whole saga. State House correspondent, State House Bureau Chief Karen Kassler with Ohio Public Radio and Television. Thanks for joining us here on Snollygoster.
Hey, great to talk to you.
We'll be right back.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Much of the national news coverage not focused on the Trump trial has focused on campus protests over the war in Gaza. Students camping at Columbia, Harvard, closing off Harvard Yard, arrests at Yale University, New York University, Berkeley, apparently the University of Texas. And here in Ohio, it's been relatively quiet. There have been protests at Ohio State. They attract 100 or so protesters at a time at the most. Those protests have gotten a little louder in the past week or so. OSU President Ted Carter wrote a letter to campus earlier this week after pro-Palestinian protesters chanted sayings that many consider anti-Semitic. He told students, staff, and faculty he fully supports free speech, but the university will enforce policies with regards to hate speech and demonstrations that cross a line that violate university policies. On Tuesday, OSU police arrested a couple of protesters for trespassing. A university spokesman says they were too loud and where they were disrupting an event happening inside of a building. The protest was outside. The event was inside, but apparently they were, according to the university, too loud and disrupting that event. And then early Thursday, about 20 protesters set up what was the start of an encampment on the South Oval just across the street from the student union. OSU police were there. They were warning them not to set up the tents fully because that would violate university policy if they did not have permission. So we'll see how that unfolds. It's been relatively quiet here in Ohio at campuses here in Ohio. But as graduation season approaches, school administrators, they are trying to balance the right to protest with preventing disruptions to events. It will be an eventful couple of weeks, no doubt. And then the students go home for summer. And we'll see if the protests continue. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. This week, we give it to U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson, who this week angered some conservatives by working with Democrats to pass that bill to give foreign aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. But then he immediately went to Columbia University, 1,425 miles from his home district of Shreveport, Louisiana. He went to Columbia in Manhattan to denounce pro-Palestinian protesters and to call on President Biden to activate the National Guard to quell the campus protests. It goes without saying that we in Ohio know National Guard troops and campus protests clashing can have tragic results. But for trying to gain back some conservative cred after leading a bipartisan effort, Speaker Johnson gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast, and just tell your friends, family, enemies about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.